Welcome to 40ANM N5, a download of 40ANM LLC, recorded at 1800 Eastern on Sunday, October 6th. I'm Chris Bohm, and welcome to our weekly selection of tech sector and related global news and policy highlights from the past week. Coming up, Twitter files its S-1 with the SEC, previewing an expected IPO. Google may be in line to end the long-running antitrust investigation of it by the European Commission. Facebook will soon be making a status update and posting edit function available to all of its users. European Central Bank President Mario Draghi comments on the ECB's decision to keep rates where they are. And the president of MIT writes an op-ed for Time magazine, commenting on the future of digital learning. And finally, we round out this week with comments on a few calendar items for the coming week. But first, on a day when Director of National Intelligence James Clapper expected to spend most of his appearance before the Senate Judiciary Committee addressing issues related to surveillance revelations, the Wednesday, October 2nd hearing focused mainly on intelligence coverage issues related to the government shutdown. According to Clapper, the shutdown has led to furlough of about 70% of civilians at the U.S. intelligence agencies, saying that the budget stalemate is having a serious impact on their ability to guard against threats to national security. On top of sequestration, he said, this seriously damages our ability to protect the security and safety of this nation and its citizens. The ranking Republican on the committee, Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa, said that he was puzzled by reports that up to 72% of civilian employees had been furloughed as non-essential, saying that either you need better lawyers who can make a case for you, or you're overemploying in those areas. Clapper said that the law only allows civilian employees to be kept at work if their work addresses an imminent threat of life or property. National Security Agency Director Keith Alexander said that his agency has kept people at work on the most significant terrorism threats and to support troops in Afghanistan, but has furloughed those focused on other areas. The hearing comes just 3 days after a dozen U.S. tech companies and rights associations co-signed a letter to the chairs of the House and Senate Judiciary Committees requesting rapid movement on legislation to increase transparency over national security-related data requests. The letter specifically called out strong support for Senate Bill S-1452, the Surveillance Transparency Act of 2013, and H.R. 3035, the Surveillance Order Reporting Act of 2013, each of which would clarify that companies have the right to publish basic statistics about government demands for their user data. The group of companies had previously written a letter to the same senators and congressmen on July 18th, asking for legislation that would require more comprehensive transparency reporting by the government and allow for more comprehensive transparency reporting by U.S. companies who receive national security-related requests. Senator Al Franken, Democrat of Minnesota, and 11 co-sponsors, including Chairman Leahy and Representative Lofgren, were among the first bipartisan coalitions to develop new legislation. The existing Senate bill, S-1452, would provide for significant reporting by the government itself, while the House bill, H.R. 3035, would provide for reporting by companies of both FISA-related requests and National Security Letter, or NSL, requests. Chairman Leahy of the Senate Judiciary Committee was mentioned specifically in the letter for his longstanding support for NSL letter reform, particularly in the wake of the March 2013 U.S. District Court opinion in California that invalidated the gag order related to NSL requests as unconstitutional. Some of the companies participating in the October 30th letter include America Online, Apple, Facebook, Foursquare, Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft, Mozilla, Tumblr, Twitter, and Yahoo. On Thursday, Twitter offered its first look at its pre-IPO financials in a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Twitter is reportedly seeking to raise $1 billion in going public, and an IPO is expected within weeks. The SEC filing, known as an S-1, showed that Twitter brought in $254 million in revenue during the first half of 2013, $317 million in 2012, and $106 million in 2011, but it has never made a profit. The expectation is that there would be 472.6 million shares of common stock outstanding after a Twitter IPO, for a company that now cites 218.3 million monthly active users, up 44% from a year earlier. According to All Things D, Twitter CEO Dick Costolo had said to insiders that the company had expected to grow to 400 million monthly active users by the end of 2013, a goal that it will likely fall short of. Twitter, which was formed in 2006 by Evan Williams and Biz Stone of Odeo, would join both Facebook and LinkedIn among its competitor social media companies to have gone public within the last 2 years. On Thursday of this week, the BBC reported that the European Commission seems to be indicating that new concessions by Google may prove an end to its long-running antitrust investigation against the search company. According to the BBC report, few details are known, but the concessions are believed to include measures to make it easier for web users to see search results from Google rival companies. The company had been accused by rivals in 2010 for taking measures to make it more difficult for rivals to compete, particularly in Europe, where Google is estimated to account for nearly 80% of the online advertising market. Joaquin Almunia, competition commissioner, told the European Parliament that they had reached a key moment in the case. Key among officials' complaints involved the way in which Google displayed its own vertical search services compared with other companies' products, as well as restrictions on advertisers from moving their online campaigns to other search engines. You may recall that in April, Google had suggested a possible package of concessions, including an offer for it to label its own services and to make it easier for users to distinguish these from its competitor services. But critics say that these concessions did not go far enough. As reported by the BBC, the deal would allow Google's competitors to display their own logos next to their services and take up more space on Google's results pages. And it may also allow websites greater control over what parts of their sites appear in Google's results. For some time now, Facebook has been piloting a new feature that allows users to edit their posts and status updates. In the past, an update would have to have been deleted and reposted in order to make any changes, losing any comments on it or likes from other users. The primary rationale for the new feature is to help users correct spelling or grammatical errors, but some fear that these status and other updates could now become stitch-ups that no longer resemble the posts that other users had previously endorsed or commented on. Such comments or likes could be open to misinterpretation if the content of the posts changes. Facebook added that the feature, which has been in trial among some users for some time, will mark any edited post as edited, so that the fact that an edit has occurred will be clear. The addition of the new feature comes in part after Facebook revealed that more than half of its users access the site on mobile phones, which are far more prone to errors of grammar, spelling, and syntax. European Central Bank President Mario Draghi said last week that the Eurozone remains weak, fragile, and uneven in its recovery. According to comments he made, reported by the Financial Times, BBC, and others, he said that further support for the banking sector could not be ruled out, and added that a protracted shutdown of the government in Washington could harm global growth as well. Mr. Draghi's remarks came after the European Central Bank said that it would keep its central bank rates low and on hold at 0.5%, where they are likely to be left for the foreseeable future. According to the Financial Times, the bank's plan to keep rates low comes in part amid speculation over when the U.S. Federal Reserve will begin to scale back its own bond-buying program and stimulus. When asked whether he thought that the U.S. could default on some of its own debt obligations when the debt ceiling limit in the U.S. is hit later in October, Mr. Draghi said sharply, "I don't." In an editorial written this past week for Time magazine, the president of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, Raphael Reif, gave some of his thoughts on the future of online learning, specifically whether massive open online courses, or MOOCs, could be an answer to reach some of the world's most undereducated, many thousands of students with coursework at a comparatively low cost. President Reif wrote in Time that digital learning is surely not good at replacing a personal connection with an inspiring teacher or mentor, but as a tool to open up learning to potentially billions without access to avenues of higher education, it is incomparably good. He cited MIT's OpenCourseWare, an initiative begun in 2002 to post virtually all MIT's course materials online for free, which has, according to the Time, attracted 150 million learners worldwide. President Reif added that by moving much of introductory course material online, some instructors could focus on developing innovative teaching techniques to be reserved for lectures. In the end, digital learning offers flexibility, whereas traditional courses require large groups of students to gather at the same time and place. And online learning is also providing an opportunity to study and use data on how students are actually learning best. President Reif's op-ed concluded that perhaps the most important elements of a true education, judgment, confidence, humility, and skill in negotiation, and exploring ideas with mentors and peers, may always be transmitted most effectively face-to-face, but that the untapped benefits of digital learning in reaching millions more has only begun. The editorial can be accessed at www.time.com. We only have a few calendar items to highlight for you this week. On Thursday, October 10th, the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs will be meeting in the Dirksen Senate Office Building to discuss the impact of the federal government shutdown on workforce and efficiency issues long term. In Europe, on the same day, Wednesday, October 10th, members of the European Parliament will be speaking with Commissioner Malmström to discuss whether the EU should put on hold the Terrorist Finance Tracking Program, or TFTP, in response to the NSA's alleged tapping of the SWIFT company's international bank transfer data. And from Sunday, October 6th through Friday, October 11th this week, the International Bar Association Conference will be taking place in Boston, Massachusetts, at the Heinz Convention Center. Some scheduled keynote speakers include former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, Associate Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, and former Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker. I'll be participating in a panel discussion hosted by the Communications Committee of the Bar on Thursday the 10th, entitled How the Net Was Won, focusing on international law and policy developments impacting communication services. So for all those attending, I'll see you in Boston later this week. You have been listening to 40 A&M in 5, a production of 40 A&M LLC. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from the BBC, Financial Times, All Things D, and Time Magazine. Thank you for joining us again today. 40 A&M will be off next week, but we will return on Monday, October 21st. Until then, make this week and every week one to remember. And bye for now. Thank you.